Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on HRN.org, Cutting the Curd. This month, I'm doing something a little bit differently. My guests this week are two cheese people with Kickstarter campaigns instead of book authors. And I want to welcome Jessica Sennett, a cheese educator who's come up with the Cheese Grotto, and Sue Miller of Bertrand Hills Farm in Pennsylvania. Welcome to both of you.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to be here.
And they're actually in the studio, which makes it much more fun than on the phone. And we're overlooking Roberta's Pizzeria, and people are actually eating pizza right in front of our noses. So anyway, Sue, I want to ask you a couple questions to introduce you to our listeners. How long have you been making cheese?
For 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting process. I took a class with Peter Dixon.
Uh-huh.
And after I woke up one morning and thought, I need to learn how to make cheese for mm-hmm. to add value to the milk for our family farm. So 7 years. And as I make cheese, I realize we're just fledglings in the world of cheese making,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the history
mm-hmm.
of the craft.
Right. So which cheese did you make first?
The Bertrand Blue.
Okay.
Of course, I did that typical error. I made something that I really loved without thinking about the process, because it's one of the most difficult cheeses to make.
Right, I would think blue is more complicated.
Yeah. It is complicated. And I say every gray hair I have on my head came from the blue cheese. It's like a wild teenager. It goes along, it behaves, and as soon as you think you have it under control, it takes off.
Mm-hmm. And when did you add Red Cat and Fat Cat?
Not that long after, maybe a year after I started making the blue. We were also making Alpine style cheese that mm-hmm. we call Equinox.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make the Fat Cat as a way to really express the milk without a whole lot of intervention
mm-hmm.
and just to see what it would become. And we really love the cheese. It has a loyal following. It has this great, lovely earthiness and mm-hmm. grassiness. And it's familiar, yet unique and interesting.
Is it more seasonal?
We do it year-round, mm-hmm. but it does have a seasonality to mm-hmm. it as mm-hmm. we go through the milk through the season.
Right, more so than the blue, where almost, the recipe would dominate.
Yes, most mm-hmm. definitely. And, you know, I think that's the beauty of that cheese, though. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to our customers about it, and they really look forward to the nuances of that throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. I tasted your cheese at the place in Reading Terminal.
Fair Food.
Yes,
with
yes.
Tania Darlington.
Yes, she brought me there to because I was interviewing her the next day about her book, and so we went to taste some Pennsylvania cheeses.
That's fun.
It's a really nice place.
It's great, and they are great supporters mm-hmm. of the Pennsylvania cheesemakers and New Jersey cheesemakers. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate to have them.
Mm-hmm. And DeBruno's as well.
Oh my gosh, DeBruno's. Emilio Mignucci, he was my first customer.
Ah.
DeBruno. So that's a great way to come out of the gate.
Yes, yes. Where are your cheeses available in New York?
They're far and few between here in New York mm-hmm. right now, but you can find them sometimes at Eataly mm-hmm. and then also at Lucy's Way.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, we've been so small
mm-hmm.
That most of our cheese just stays in that Philadelphia region.
Mm-hmm.
Very little gets into New York, but we're working to change that.
Okay, so let's talk about the Kickstarter campaign. What are you trying to raise money for?
So on the Kickstarter campaign, we're raising money for equipment for our new cheesemaking and aging facility that we will be building on our farm. Right now, we work in a rented facility and haul our milk 4 miles down the road. And mm-hmm. it's a quirky, tiny little place. We probably outgrew it 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I keep it stashed tight with cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually have secured a loan to build the facility on our farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Kickstarter is actually for equipment for
okay,
the
so
new facility.
Sort of what to put in the facility.
Right.
Okay. Are you going to start the facility regardless?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That will be starting, hopefully we'll break ground in January, depending on the weather. You know, remember we're in southeastern Pennsylvania, so we have quite a good window for that. So we're hoping, crossing our fingers, that that will work out.
Now, one thing that amazes me about Kickstarter and must make both of you a little bit nervous is that you don't get the money if you don't reach your goal. Why did they do it that way?
Oh, well, yeah, I ask myself that question
occasionally. This is
Jessica. Hi.
I mean, doesn't it make you nervous?
It does. I think it's an interesting concept. I think the theory behind it is that if you are able to, you know, have this kind of condition where you have to basically pledge within a certain time period, that you can make what you're doing viral and basically get the attention that it deserves so that you can actually get going as soon as you
make
get
it really happen.
The funds. Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, ideal situation, you get all the, you'll get the goal, the targeted goal that you set out for. But I also see that during the process, the amount of connections and the amount of exposure that you get, especially as a fledgling business or starting a new endeavor project, also provides a lot of amazing avenues. So, yeah, ideal situation, you get people to really know about it. And if they're really excited about it, they want to see it on the market. They want to see the cheeses that you're producing on your farm. And so that's the main hope.
But don't you have to lower the goal to perhaps less than you need because you want to reach it?
Yeah, I think there's definitely that philosophy to do that. And then, you know, have these stretch goals in place to go above and beyond.
Right.
And, you know, we've thought about that, what is reasonable, what we thought we could hopefully manage to connect with. But yeah, I think, you know, there's that whole finessing. It's an educational process.
I'm sure.
You know,
And probably you'd be better at it the second time.
I think so. And, you know, there are a lot of people who end up doing it another time.
Well, I mean, for another project or just a do-over.
Right.
Right. And I've heard that it's busier at first, and then it slows down so you can get really nervous. And then at the end, it speeds up when your friends are finally, you know, remembering to donate the money they said they would.
It's true. If there's one thing I learned from doing this, that when I go on Kickstarter and
to look,
and if I see a project I want to do, I've learned I am not going to procrastinate.
Oh, okay. You give them the money right away.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump on board after learning how this works.
Let's be nice to these people.
But it is interesting because, you know, they say at 7 days, it will definitely slow down. And I feel like, it, you know, we went through that little ebb as well. And but you just have to stay on top of it. Don't you think, Jessica? Just promote it.
Yeah, you just have to keep a positive attitude about it. And really just, you know, it is true. It's kind of this market research experiment as well, at least for the product that I'm designing, which is something that's new on the market in terms of what's already out there for cheese storage for the home and for, you know, retail and restaurants. So, you know, it's a way to see, okay, where is our audience? Who, you know,
who's
really captivated? How much education has to go into to making something like this and putting it out there? And really, if you get the press on it, then it doesn't really matter.
Someone else will give you the money, or you'll be hired to make it by a company or something.
And it's all, there's that. And then, you know, if the concept is validated in the public domain on that level, then people kind of automatically go towards it, which is a really interesting psychological thing. But it's kind of how it works with media. And
they'd be readier to buy it, too. So tell us more about how was making the video. Did you make the video just for the campaign?
We did do the video just for the campaign, and I actually had a great crew of students from St. Joseph's University in a social media program who took me on as a client. We met a couple of times. They had a really great idea of what we wanted, and in one morning they came out to the farm and they just shot a ton of footage and did a fantastic job editing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for us, I really wanted people to feel connected to our farm mm-hmm. and how important that is to us in our cheese making. And I feel like the students did a fantastic job mm-hmm. at conveying that.
Mm-hmm.
So we were pretty thrilled about it.
So you can use that video permanently on a website.
Yes, yeah, most definitely.
It's a nice video.
Most yeah, definitely. Yeah. They did a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm. Now, did it cost a lot or was it?
They took me on as a free client.
Oh, because they're learning. They're learning. Oh,
they're
wonderful.
Learning. So that so is a tip for other people.
And that, it looked very professional.
It did. They did it in a quick turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
Just very efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have farm backgrounds, so they really listened. And I think that was important.
Mm-hmm. And that's good for them to learn how to please a client that they don't know much about.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. So it's great because, you know, this community for me has grown exponentially just since we started this Kickstarter mm-hmm. in the most phenomenal way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jessica, tell us a little bit about your what your Kickstarter campaign is focused on.
Oh, yes. I actually also have a little bit background in cheese making and also in the retail world, mm-hmm. a little bit of both. Did some managing of a cheese making operation in Washington State, and then did cave renovations for Formaggio Kitchen in Cambridge,
mm-hmm.
And moved out here and to help develop some of the educational program at Bedford Cheese Shop. And kind of throughout the process, something that I have been thinking about and exploring and drafting up and drawing has been about optimal cheese storage for the home,
mm-hmm.
which is where this is all really starting. You know, one of the main questions you always get when you're working in a cheese shop is, you know, how do I best store
right,
this?
Right.
And so because of that, you know, I was thinking about how there is kind of a disconnect between the enjoyment of the cheese and the understanding of what the product is mm-hmm. and how to best maintain it. So the product that I've invented is basically taking these concepts of traditional cave technology like humidity and mm-hmm. airflow. And it has a little vaulted ceiling, which helps with condensation if there's an excess buildup.
I'm going to touch it right now. It's here in the studio.
Please, please touch it. And it's made out of bamboo and corian and glass.
It's heavy.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of a weight to it because it's something that all the materials have a lot of integrity to them. It's something that, you know, you buy it and you have it for your life.
I'm playing with
things.
It right now.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
So essentially it couples, it has kind of two purposes. It can be used in the fridge as a perfect preservation technique for cut pieces of cheese without packaging. And you just put it in there. You can see what it is that you have. You don't have to wrap it in wax paper because the humidity and the airflow are
no packaging.
That.
So you can see your cheese and bring it out to your table very easily.
Yes, yes.
Ah, nice.
It also does work if you are comfortable with having cheese at room temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people do who really are into cheese do enjoy doing that. And so it works in the same capacity on the counter. You can also use it as a ripening or aging device for all the DIY foodies that are out there. Mm-hmm. People who like to get into doing fermentation projects. I always thought about, you know, how do you do this if you have a small space or if you have maybe a cellar, but you don't have a cave that's built into it. So you basically take the qualities, you take the humidity and you get the airflow correct. And you have a little bit of adjustability to the airflow. And if you put it in a cool cellar, which is, you know, between, you know, 48, 50 to like 55 degrees, then you can actually make entire wheels of cheese and then age them.
But that would be a small wheel.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the way that our
plan... Is
there
going to be a bigger one?
There is. Our plan, there's actually a variety of rewards as well. But our one of the higher ones is to be able to custom build whatever size it is
oh,
that
cool.
you want for your actual cheese grotto. As well, what comes with that is this extensive tasting experience with Max McCallman, who's a really mm-hmm. well-known cheese connoisseur. But yeah, I mean, basically we would like this design, which is modular, to be something that we can build on a bigger scale.
In different sizes.
You know, be perfect for restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
who are doing these, you know, cheese appreciation menus, who have these tastings, you could have something like this on a cart mm-hmm. and it just lives on there and you right. roll it out and you have this beautiful presentation and, you know, it will keep the cheese for the longest period of time. Mm-hmm. So restaurants are going to be great. Retailers, definitely for cases. Mm-hmm. It would be an interesting option for people, especially like some of the fresher and bloomy rind styles. If you had a little separate case for those, that mm-hmm. would be perfect for it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is really the beginning.
Okay.
And there's a
well,
lot
we're ready for our break now. We're going to talk about rewards and more Kickstarter when we get back after the break. This is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd. We'll see you soon.
What's it gonna be? You take the holy high road, or you come along with me?
You are listening to Dance with the Devil by the Sparrows.
With all the chances that I'll give, we won't get lost amongst the crowd. People will turn their heads and howl. Just take a look at you. You're dreaming of a life out on the road with me. We'll swing in style all the miles.
The Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hello, this is Mark Ladner from Del Posto, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, this is Diane Stemple. I'm back on Cutting the Curd with Jessica Sennett and Sue Miller of
Bertrand Hills Farm.
Oh, thank you. And do you have a company?
Well, Cheese Grotto is the name of the company.
And Jessica of Cheese Grotto.
Yeah.
So one thing that you know, I learned about a lot about Kickstarter this week getting ready for the show. And they're really into the rewards. Now, can you tell us how you came up with some of your rewards? I saw one of yours, Sue, was naming a cow.
Oh, my goodness. That has been such a wonderful surprise.
That people want that reward.
Oh, they most definitely want that reward. And it started out with the first person I think that jumped on that reward, then she went on to social media and started testing out the names that she wanted to use. And then people
were voting.
Right. And then it grew from there, and it's just turned on into a life of its own.
And then they might have to donate to get their own cow.
Yeah. And people are like, you know, in cheese shops, they're all, the mongers are chipping in together so that they can get their own.
It's perfect. Now, don't your cows have names?
They do have names.
So what are you going to do? Rename them?
Well, these are for the newborns.
Oh, okay.
These are for the newborns. So the new calves born on the farm, people will get a photograph of their calf and they'll have the opportunity to name them. And I just thought that was just wild.
People went for it. And how many cows do you have?
We milk about 80.
Okay, so how many get born?
Well, so in theory, it would be great to have 80 calves born. Half of them are going to be males and half females. So we do milk a little bit more than 80 cows, but we put up 40.
Okay.
40 calves to be named. So that's really
exciting.
Because
you don't want you want your calf to stick around.
We do want them to stick around. We want them to name the females. And you know, that's special. It's fun to do. We get a kick out of naming them, so we thought other people would.
Okay. Yeah, okay. And the other hilarious reward that I saw on your list was for a lot of money, come run the farm for the day. Now, would you really be able to let someone do that?
Well, we would stick with them every step of the way. But the funniest thing was, my husband's like, let's just put out there for Christmas Day that if somebody gave this amount, they could run the farm for a day on Christmas.
Oh, so you don't have to?
Yeah, right. That was his theory. But so then we thought, well, let's make it a little bit more general, because that may not be as exciting for everyone. But, you know, there is that whole connection to the farm that we've gotten away
and
from.
And that's an attraction. Yeah, that's an attraction for
and,
people.
You know, we just threw it out there because, you know, we want people to always remember that cheesemakers are, you know, mm-hmm. farmstead cheesemakers are farming land and taking care of animals.
So. And you have dinner on the farm as a reward, too, right?
Definitely dinner on the farm, family style. We're going to work with a chef that we're very good friends with in Philadelphia to put on the dinner with our own meats and our cheeses and local producers.
Oh, wonderful.
A new one we just put up is a poster of Mike Gino's painting of the Bertrand Blue.
I saw that too.
The painting sold. So he's been so supportive, and he said, let's do a poster and put that out there.
Oh, wonderful.
So I just noticed today that people are jumping onto that poster, and there's not a lot of them available.
Excellent.
The painting's amazing.
How about your rewards, Jessica? What are your cool rewards for people?
Oh, well, we have been basically working on definitely offering a lot of the product itself at different levels. We have two different products that we're actually coming out with at the same time. Mm-hmm. One is a wood and screen box, which is basically it's used in Europe pretty frequently.
It looks similar, but it doesn't have the same properties.
Yes, okay. Yes. And that one is, we're doing that one. That one's actually been a pretty popular reward. It's something that is for people who appreciate having cheese on their counter without refrigeration. Mm-hmm. And it's also a really great thing for a gift for people that, you know, if they're giving a bunch of cheese, to have this kind of antiquated idea of how the storage should happen. Mm-hmm. So that's one of our rewards. We also have on a little bit of the higher side, the actual grotto itself, which, you know, it's the first on the market. So so that's pretty exciting.
That would be exciting.
And we're planning a huge party when we do our launch. So that's going to be really fun. We already had a lot of fun doing the Kickstarter launch party, which was, basically, you know, come and eat lots of cheese from local producers and retailers and makers, and, you know, be able to talk to people about what it is that they're making and listen to music. And so this will be kind of that, you know, on steroids.
big.
So, basically we also wanted them to have some educational qualities to them. So we developed a flavor wheel for a certain style of cheese that people can get at the lower reward for a certain Blumy Rind style, and the higher ones would be more like the education.
Do they tell you who's donating?
Yes, you do know the name.
Do you find it's people you know mostly, or is it strangers?
A lot of people that we know from just being out in the cheese world, but and then some new unfamiliar people too. So it's really interesting, the process and who will support. It's pretty exciting.
How about you?
I would say it's kind of like a 50-50 that a lot of the people that have definitely at the beginning who contributed were, you know, people that I knew who were excited
and they
about
knew
the
you were doing it and you had been telling them about it.
Yeah. Right. But you know, there definitely are a lot of people that have been interested in it that are just, you know, the people out there who really appreciate cheese. And our main, you know, what our challenge is, because we don't have too much time left in our Kickstarter campaign, is to really make sure that all of the people out there who really, you know, already really appreciate cheese and want to bring their experience to the next level know about what we're doing, because they can be involved. They can be the first people to get this. So that's really, you know, finding that crowd of people.
Do you both have plan B's? What if you don't reach your goal? What's plan B?
Plan B is to make it work. Well, you know, as farmers, we're resilient.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
So
well, you're doing a little better, and you have more days. I think you don't have so many days left.
Yeah, I mean, it is tricky. Our plan B, we've definitely been. The fundraising elements of what I've discovered through this process is that you can fundraise in a lot of different ways. So Kickstarter is one avenue for getting the idea out there.
Right.
So definitely that's going to be one of our plans. We're also, I mean, this is really the first phase of that we're looking for, you know, a boost to right. get to the next level, which mm-hmm. would be to actually be in operation. And mm-hmm. with product and product design, it's you need a decent amount of investment up front in right. order to get the ball mm-hmm. rolling, you know, in terms of what inventory you have in your warehouse. So we're definitely looking to get investors. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. also what's been going on simultaneously Good. Is, you know, establishing those connections, strengthening the brand mm-hmm. and, you know, making sure that all of those meetings are established by the time we're done with this phase. So mm-hmm. we have plan B.
Right. Yeah. Right. Cause, and anyone listening can find them. All I did was go on Kickstarter and put in cheese, and you're both on, I think, on the first line. You're the current cheese Kickstarter things happening. There have been others, but they're over. Right. And they've been successful, I think.
Yeah, lots of success in cheese. But yeah. we know how the community loves cheese.
Yes,
it's
yes,
the easiest way to make friends, isn't it, Jessica?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, we were talking about that, you know.
Yes, it's a wonderful community. Now, I was wondering if we could just, for the last final minutes, talk about Thanksgiving. What are your cheese plans for Thanksgiving?
Oh, well, go first.
Yeah, I have such great access to some phenomenal local cheesemakers in southeastern Pennsylvania mm-hmm. that there'll be a little bit of cheeses from my neighboring farms in
oh,
there,
cool.
you know, and that's mm-hmm. really great. We're always eating each other's cheeses and mm-hmm. testing them out. And a couple of my favorites will be from Doe Run and Shellbark mm-hmm. Hollow and mm-hmm. Cherry Grove.
Now, do we all feel that you only eat American cheese for Thanksgiving? Are you allowed oh. to eat European cheese on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that because, you know, I ran into a really good aged Gruyere at DeBruno's the other week, and I was like, I wonder if there's any of that left.
Oh, man. I mean,
so you're liberal.
Yeah, it can be open.
I mean, fall cheeses are so phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, what you can find, what comes from all over, what comes from Europe as well, like during mm-hmm. this time,
right.
during
right.
fall and winter. Yeah, it's hard to say no to uh-huh. to the international community of
right.
cheese makers.
And okay, for serving cheese, is it before dinner on Thanksgiving or after dinner on Thanksgiving?
Well, I kind of like to have some before dinner mm-hmm. and then again after dinner.
Yeah. That's great. Would you save the blue for after?
Yeah, probably save the blue for after. We have our Thanksgiving dinner midday, and then our family goes out to milk the cows,
okay.
which is great to mm-hmm. help us work a little bit of that off.
Nice.
And then when we come in, you know, of course, we'll be hungry again.
Okay.
So we'll do two cheese plates.
Okay, how about you? What?
Yeah, I mean, I actually would say that I agree to that. You start with more of the lighter bodied, mm-hmm. You know, maybe of like a fresher mm-hmm. goat's milk or something to start off as
right,
like a little,
right.
You know, hors d'oeuvre. And then, you know, when at the end, it's really nice to just go all
right,
out and
right.
have a variety of flavors mm-hmm. because, you know, then you can just sit there and appreciate that and also, you know, maybe not gorge completely on
right,
the
on the desserts. Yeah. Well, and then does anyone put cheese on their pie? That's a possibility. Either cheddar or blue, I think, would go on apple pie.
Yeah, I think blue. I usually just go straight up my pumpkin, straight up apple.
Okay.
But,
okay.
you know, you may have, that might be flirting with me, Diane, the blue on the apple pie.
Right, right.
Might have to.
You know, I don't want to fill up on cheese before Thanksgiving dinner.
Right.
And I always do fill up on cheese if it's there, so it's a struggle. Who's cooking your turkey? Are you cooking?
Oh, well, I'm not cooking the turkey this year. We're actually going to a friend's house, having kind of like a Friendsgiving. My mm-hmm. mom's coming into town, and we're all going to go over there. And, yeah, so
are you
leaving
in charge
it up to
of
her.
Bringing the cheese?
I'm definitely going to bring some cheese, and I'm thinking I'm going to make some also because I like to make some fresh varieties too.
Okay.
That's what I do. When I'm teaching, I do fresh varieties for the house. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And will you bring the cheese grotto?
I mean, it's my baby right now.
It does wherever you go. It
comes everywhere with me. So, yeah, how could it miss out on Thanksgiving?
It is about the size of a baby.
Yeah, definitely. I need to get one of those slick straps.
Right, you need a sling.
Yeah, there we go.
How about you? Who's cooking your turkey dinner?
Well, my 83-year-old father is cooking the turkey. He will not relinquish that task. So I'll do all the sides and everything else, but he wants to do the turkey. So
that's phenomenal. That's phenomenal.
Which is, it's great. You know, and my kids, that's their favorite holiday is Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. They like to gather with everybody. Mm-hmm. We roll out of the harvest season into winter mode. So it's really nice.
Yeah.
And one thing about being a cheesemaker is you always have a ready-made covered dish. So wherever you go, you have cheese to do.
Right. That's true. Okay. Well, thank both of you. Thank you, Sue Miller. Thank you, Jessica Sennett.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope your Kickstarter campaigns take off and meet your goals. And thanks for coming into the studio today. This is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd. I'll see you in a month.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.